This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today, we're going over Anything's Possible. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Are you ready for one dry kiss?
I hope that was a song.
It was a song.
I didn't know what you were going for. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, because I did a bad my portion of it, but you did a perfect follow up of it. So yes.
Oh, thank you. Nice. That means I'm better than you at singing, right?
Yes, that's exactly what
it
means.
Right. The day has come. The day has finally come.
You get the grip.
And it'll probably end in about 10 minutes.
I am here with my Grammy Award-winning co-host, Miss Tamara Cosio, with the voice of an angel.
And I am here with my backup singer, Corinne Eddy.
I'll backup sing for you any day.
Grab that mic. I want to see some dance moves, too, with the singing. I don't think you're ready for this jelly. I don't think you're ready for this jelly.
You know I can't help but move.
Oh, I know. That's why it's a podcast, though, so people can't see your sweet-ass dance moves, which is very, very, it's a travesty.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one singular free-to-be-you-and-me movie in the month of April.
In the high notes, April!
And today we're doing Anything's Possible, and I love this movie, and I have been looking for, like, a place where I could put this movie and have it work magnificently, and I think this was an excellent theme for it.
Lovingly tucked into our Free to Be You and Me April.
Yes.
Excellent choice for this topic, Corinne. Excellent choice.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you are rubbing your eyes like something's on your mind, Corinne.
Well, I mean, look, when you wake up at 3 a.m. and you have to get up at 6
a.m. Oh,
yes. And there's a grilled cheese.
And you don't have a butler to make you a grilled cheese.
Yes, if I don't have a butler to make me a grilled cheese, how am I supposed to make a grilled cheese sandwich for myself without, like, disrupting my sleep flow? These are the questions that one asks themselves when it's 3 a.m. I want a grilled cheese sandwich, but I know I shouldn't because it's going to, like, take precious sleeping time off of my schedule.
Yes, we've obviously discussed this before we started the podcast, and Corinne was like, golly gee, if I was in a hotel room, I for sure would have called down to room service at 3 a.m. and ordered me a goddamn grilled cheese.
Oh, I would have. That would have been amazing. And I would have paid the $30 that stinking grilled cheese sandwich cost.
That's why I said she needs to have a butler in her one-bedroom apartment in Oakland to make her a grilled cheese when room service just isn't around and available.
Oh, like, I say that I would do these things, but it's all lies because whenever I look at the price for room service, I'm like, I can't do that. And whenever I look at the... and when I think about, like, waking up a butler at 3 a.m. to make me a grilled cheese sandwich, I'm like, they're sleeping. Just respect their space. We could, like, he can help me out during, like, regular working hours. Jeez, Corinne.
Oh my gosh, that totally reminds me of an interview I heard on Conan O'Brien, one of the stars of Blackish. I'm looking up his name right now. Dion Cole.
Oh,
I
yeah.
It was. He was. He was on Conan O'Brien and Conan Needs a Friend, his podcast.
Yeah.
And he was talking about getting room service one day. I hope I am not mislabeling who told this story because it was very funny. But Conan's like, yeah, I heard there was a story about you and room service, even though he was, like, very famous and very well off. Apparently, he had dived into the minibar.
Whoa.
Partook of all the snacks and drinks and beverages. And then he saw the price breakdown and was like, holy fucking shit. Literally went out to, like, 3 or 4 different stores and rebought all of those candy bars and the sodas and the drinks.
Damn Skippy.
And restocked the fridge before he checked out.
Damn Skippy.
Because no Snickers bars were $7. I don't care.
For real. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but that's just a testament to all the people out there that say they would get room service until they actually see the prices and are still like, yeah, no. Rich and famous, still not paying that much for that shit.
Oh, my goodness. How are you doing, Miss Tamara?
I had a great day.
Ooh.
I changed something in my routine this morning. Instead of watching the news, I decided to watch some TED Talks while I got ready. And it just put a little sparkle on my day that lasted all throughout it. And I'm not riding high on that TED Talk stamina anymore because I had a really big sandwich and I have a sub baby right now. But other than that, my day's been pretty good. I am an advocate for changing your routines and seeing what happens.
So is that why I no longer hear the theme, "I'm walking on sunshine," woo-hoo, playing behind you? Because it was the sandwich that like put a kibosh on that.
Yes. It's more like, yeah, "I'm walking on sunshine." Oh, God. Time to feel good. No. Shouldn't have had that footlong, girl. No. And the loaded fries. You had to get the loaded fries.
Oh, you always have to get the loaded fries. But I take the footlong and I put half of it in the fridge.
I was trying to do that, but it was a very juicy sandwich and I was eating it and I was like, this is not going to be good tomorrow. I gotta do it.
No, that's going to be soggy and gross. Yeah.
I did not eat a lot of the fries. I took like a couple of bites of fries and I tucked those in for tomorrow. Even though they'll be soggy, they're better than a soggy sandwich in my opinion. Oh, but that's just me.
Yeah. No, soggy bread is. Ugh.
Yeah. It was uncanny because I've been stressing out about trying to find a job and not getting any callbacks. Like, people will open my resume but not call me in for an interview, and it's very disheartening and soul crushing, and you think nobody loves you out in the world. And today, for some reason, I was like, fuck it. The right thing will come along when it needs to come along, and I just gotta keep plugging away until it does.
And gentle listeners, for those of you who are interested, Tamara is an amazing graphic designer and she created our beautiful logo. So if you know of any fantastic either remote graphic design positions or ones that are located in the Bay Area, but not LA, then you can. No, I'm just kidding. But ones that are located in the Southern California, Los Angeles area, then send them on her way.
Oh my God.
Tamara, did you talentedly type the tremendous to synopsis? Question mark? To thanks?
Yes. Yes, I did. Thank you for that, Corinne. And I was also looking at that laughing and being like, ah, she said synopsis and she spelled it with the T. The T silent like pterodactyl. And I was like, wait, the T's not silent in pterodactyl. The P silent in pterodactyl. Oh, anyways, yes, I did. Yes. Synopsis. Ethan Bortnick stars in this. Oh, wait. Oh, wait a second. That's the 2013 movie, Anything's Possible. I need the 2022 version. Ooh. That was directed by the Billy Porter. Okay, here we go. Kelsa, played by Eva Rain, is a high school student who's got a good group of friends, is fierce in her fashion sensibilities, loves animals, and is trans. She is confident in all areas of her life except love. That is until Carl, played by, oh, I'm going to try it, Abubakar Ali, enters the picture. There are serious sparks between them, but also a teensy tiny problem. Kelsa's bestie M, played by Courtney Carter, also likes Carl. And when Carl and Kelsa make their feelings known, more sparks fly into school, and not the good kind. No. The couple must navigate their growing feelings for each other, the friend drama that is spurred from M's unrequited feelings, and a slew of differential treatment. Is it discrimination? Is it sabotage? Is it to get woke points? Question mark. When all Kelsa wants to do is just be. Mm-hmm. Be her. Be in love. Be off to college the following year. Will Kelsa get her way? Well, anything's possible. So find out with us.
She wants to be free to be. She wants to be free to be me. Herself, in regards. Yes. Aww.
Corinne, are you ready to jump on into Anything's Possible?
I'm so excited. Yes, I am. We open with 17-year-old trans teenager Kelsa making a video. She pontificates to her audience. One of the reasons I love animals so much is that they're all named after what makes them unique. She names several animals, insects, and whatnot, with pictures of the corresponding animal popping up next to her face, including the blue-footed booby and Skeptia Beyonce, or the Beyonce fly. She explains, what makes them unique is also what helps them survive. And I'm guessing when the Beyonce fly meets a predator, she just tells them, to the left, to the left. That's my bad joke.
That's good. That was a good bad joke.
Thank you.
Everything in your box to the left.
The video is done and Kelsey is getting ready for her first day of her senior year. And what makes her unique, aside from her love of animals, is her unique eye for fashion. Not only does she have a signature look, she helps her friends with their look as well.
I'm raising my hand because when I went to high school, and I'm not entirely sure if this is the same, you could not wear midriff tops. So you had to have your belly covered, and Kelsa is showing all kinds of skin, up skin and below skin, middle skin, side skin. And I'm just like, does her school let that happen? And I feel gypped because I think I would have been a much stronger fashion icon had I had the flexibility to show more skin. I'm just saying.
There was a reasonable amount of skin showing at my school, so.
Maybe it was just the Piedmont prudiness then that happened. I know I didn't have a lot of money for clothes, new clothes, but if I could have sheared off a thing or two to make a shirt new and in a different way, then I totally would have done that. I would have been experimenting with scissors like a mofo.
You're like, first the bangs and then no.
See this shirt? Last week it was a sweatshirt. This week it's a t-shirt. Now it's a tummy tee. Now it's a tank top. I got 5 different looks from one piece of clothes.
You're like, make it 6. I'm making it a tube top next week. Bam.
Oh, yeah. And then I would have got sent home. I'm sorry, Miss Cosio. You are sewing way too much skin.
But tube tops are so cool.
Ugh. I know. That's, she was rocking her tops. And I was like, girl, I'm jealous.
I think that I wore some half shirts to high school. But I also know that one of the people in my class ended up getting in trouble for a particular outfit that she was wearing that could have been kind of similar to what Kelsa was wearing. So, except the shorts were shorter. I mean, there weren't bicycle shorts underneath the short shorts. We all felt it was stupid and we protested. Anywho. Huh. Kelsa rushes downstairs looking like a prime 90s fly girl. Pink biker shorts with a pair of jean short shorts over them, a pink crop top, and a purple boa thrown casually over her shoulders. She inwardly muses that her mom's Celine, played by Renee Elise Goldsberry of Hamilton and Girls 5 Eva fame, is like an elephant. You mess with her, baby, and she'll trample all over you. Celine offers Kelsa a banana, which Kelsa takes a quick bite of and continues moving. Her mom calls after her. Oh, we're wearing boas now. Can I get me one? Are you wearing a bra? Kelsa stops in her tracks. Mom, law of averages. Celine banters back. Oh, it passes the law. The average mom would be concerned that her average daughter was covering the girls. She gestures dramatically across her chest and Kelsa protests. Mom, don't call them that. Kelsa greets her two besties at the front door. Chris, who has super cute blue short hair, and M, who is dressed like an astronaut. Kelsa invites her besties upstairs to her room and narrates, some animals use, oh, fuck me with these words. Kelsa, you have an excellent vocabulary that I do not have for scientific words, and I am sure the actress had some special training to get these words out. Or maybe she just, like, magically knew.
What is it, apothecary?
A post-sabbatic? A possumatic? I don't know. Signals, which basically means you survive by serving looks, which M is great at. She's like the panther chameleon. Emphasis on panther. If she likes something from your closet, you gotta let her have it. Kelsa then compares her friend Chris to a howler monkey / honey badger combo. She's like, I am here and I am chaos, honey. Kelsa loves her friends and the different ways they get by. She says, what's cool is that survival is creative.
When I first watched this movie, M was walking up in her astronaut outfit that was like kind of iridescent. I don't know why, but for a second I caught I didn't catch the conversation that they had when she was like, "You have to help me with this. I bought it online. It looks so cute on the computer screen." And so missed that, watched it and was like, "What is this girl wearing?" And then when I watched it the second time, I caught that conversation. And I was like, "Oh, that makes so much more sense." Because I'm like, "Oh, she's rocking that fucking puffy girl iridescent astronaut suit like nobody's business." She didn't want to, but she still was. She still was.
Oh, she totally.
Brave, bold look.
Yeah, she totally was. It was a very bold look. But as she pointed out, it looked like she was wearing diapers. And they had fixed it. By the time she got to school, she was wearing a modified version of that look. And it looked even better. Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We then move into a very different household. And when Kelsa narrates, "Meerkats survive by keeping their family close," we see high school senior Call's family getting ready in the morning. Call is looking great in a 50s terry cloth polo shirt. Arwen, his younger brother, is channeling Elvis with the pompadour. The two brothers and mom and dad settle at a kitchen island for breakfast, while Arwen asks if he can get a skullet, like a mullet but shaved up front but keeping it long and party-like in the back.
Whoop, whoop.
Mom says no. Dad says sure. And the parents laugh. And suddenly, my nephew's, this is Tamara talking, suddenly my nephew's permed mullet makes so much more sense now.
Yes! Oh my gosh, you're totally right. He's got like the skullet going.
Wow. He's got the skullet.
Yeah.
But it wasn't enough emphasis on the front, so he got a perm. So it's not shaved up front, but it is definitely shorter, still party-like atmosphere with a full-on rager behind
yes.
his head.
Well, but there was a period of time when it was super short, like super short on the sides.
Oh.
But you're right. He did get, I had thought, because I saw a picture of him and I was like, oh, did he get, is his hair just naturally curly and I didn't notice before?
No.
Oh.
He got a perm.
You go, David Bowie. Okay.
But he likes it and that's all that matters.
He's higher maintenance than Alicia is.
Oh, for sure. He changes his hair probably twice a year. I like was sticking with the hair bear thing for years and be like, this is in style. I have to look like everybody else. And he's like, fuck it. Even though he's like 13. Okay, F it. I shouldn't curse for him. F it. I'm going to do my own thing and rock my own look and fucking kick it out of the park.
Oh, we were cursing up a storm at the age of 13, but you know.
I know. I think it was right when 13 when I finally realized that my dad wasn't going to run around a corner and beat the shit out of me if I said a four-letter word that I just like, fuck, shit, ass, bitch, motherfucking shit, cunt. Like, I was just going all the town. It was like held in me for 12 years, and then at 13 it just erupted out. Mm-hmm.
You finally felt free to be you and me.
Yes, and I was blasphemous. My real self was blasphemous. Dad Sasan asks Arwen if there are Grease auditions today at school. Call looks at Kelsa and her friends getting ready on TikTok, jumping and changing into different outfits. Mom's not having it, though, and tells Call to put down his phone. It's family breakfast, for goodness sakes. But enough of this family togetherness stuff. This movie is about sweet, sweet young love, and our protagonists have yet to meet on their first day of school. So, off to high school. Doodle-doodle-doo. And more specifically, off to art class. Doodle-doodle-doo. Kelsa rushes a bit late into art class, and Miss Kidd, the glamorous art teacher, warmly gives her a hard time. Nice of you to join us, Kelsa. Good morning, everybody. Kelsa quickly snags the last stool in front of the class, and Miss Kidd dramatically spreads her arms wide. Today we'll be doing portraits. Pick a partner and paint each other in the style of your choice. Kelsa looks anxiously around the classroom. Everyone's pairing up, but fortunately for her, the very dreamy Call is sitting behind her and points his paintbrush towards her with a questioning look on his face. She smiles back, and it is on. Time for them to self-portraitize each other. They have a cute conversation about the many shades of pink. Call is particular about his colors and their names. He's a color purist. And when Kelsa sees the portrait he's made of her, which is vibrant, created from pastel colors, and Call describes it as street art, Kelsa is impressed, as was I. I was like, goddamn, there's some talented fucking students in this class. Shit. Call tells her that she can have it, and Kelsa remarks on how nice Call is. He tries to play it off, but It's obvious that Kelsa has had her eye on him for a while, as she pulls out several supporting arguments for his niceness from the last year, just like when he took out one of their fellow students' ceramic soccer balls out of the kiln because there was not a hole in it and it would have exploded. So when nobody was looking, he fished it out, put a hole in, and gently placed it back in. She saw that. He tried to play it off like he didn't want that project kersploding all over his project, but she's like, no, you are already firing yours, so I know you were done with your project. Don't try to put one over on me, Call.
Somebody's been keeping their eye on Call.
Oh, you know when you don't tell me you haven't done that when you like somebody, especially in high school, and you were like, on Tuesday he had a grilled cheese sandwich.
Seriously, I'm like, dear diary, enough about me. So Fernando, he had two sticks of beef jerky, a hamburger, and a giant Pepsi for lunch. Must try this for my new diet. Thank you.
Yes.
I'm in love.
And the green sweater he was wearing so brought out the colors in his eyes. He makes a face at her and they laugh. He then looks at Kelsa's portrait of him, which is vague, like there's no facial features. It's just skin tone smears of paint. And he asks, where's my ear? That's your question, Kyle? You look like a person in witness protection testifying behind a screen in your drawing. Your missing eyes, nose, and mouth should be more of a concern to you. But he's nice about the whole thing, only notices his ear. And by the end of the class, she makes a great cartoonish slash pop art painting of him. When they leave school, they each are going home with portraits of themselves painted by the other. Oh my God, dream. High school dream. Cute guy has to look at me for a whole 45 minutes and paint me. Hello.
And then you swap portraits at the end? Oh my God, that would totally be your fantasy.
Yes. Okay, don't tell me that that's not up there on your charts too.
I had never considered that for a meet cute, but I think it's a pretty amazing one.
Yeah, it's intimate, it's personal, it's creative.
Particularly if I get to like paint him like the before of the Guess Who picture with just an outline of himself, because like the beginning of Kelsa's portrait.
Maybe they need to do that like speed dating paint nights. Oh, but then it wouldn't be speed dating because you'd be sitting there for a long fucking time with somebody. Anyways. I was spitballing. Kelsa narrates, I think this year's goal is to find out more than what I need to survive in this world. I want to find out how to thrive. Like the Pharaoh cuttlefish. She knows when to blend in, attack, and she never forgets. Mm. She is sick ass thug. Just got to slide one more curse word in there. Thug.
Kelsa comes home to her mom, who has a bevy of college pamphlets on the kitchen table, and encourages Kelsa to get to working on her college essay. Kelsa, understandably, doesn't want to use being trans as a way to get into college, but her mom encourages her to write about what happened with her dad. And I'd really like to know what happened with her dad, thanks, but we don't find out. What we do see is the lovely camaraderie between Kelsa and her mom, and we also find out that Kelsa is determined not to go to college locally in Philadelphia. There are two acceptable locations for college, L.A. or New York, and for that, she will need a damn good scholarship to make that happen. But her mom's a doctor, so. At Calls, we get a little more insight into his life. He hangs out upstairs in his spacious room, like it has a large bed, a full-size desk, and a living area with a couch, TV, coffee table, and video game system. I don't even have room for a coffee table at my house. So, yeah, he basically has a room the size of my apartment minus the kitchen.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm not jealous. No, I'm fine. This is totally cool.
I think there's a theme here when I see people's houses and I'm like, oh my God, the crown molding and the siding and the paint and the yards, this and that. And I'm like, drool. And you're like, the size of your bedroom is what you focus on. Corinne will envy the shit out of how big your bedroom is.
G, Just when it's like larger than my actual entire apartment, yes. Mm-hmm. I actually don't need a large bedroom because you know what I do in my bedroom? I sleep. But would I appreciate a slightly larger living space? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And by that, she means she will shank a bitch for a bigger square footage.
If it's rent controlled, I'm willing to make it happen.
Yes.
Anywho, his bestie, Otis, is sitting on the couch copying Call's notes.
You know what else his room has? Is a best friend that writes his notes ham-fisted because he was literally writing notes and holding the pencil in his hand in a fist. In a fist. Did you not see that? I screamed. I squealed out loud. I was like, what is happening? I thought he was trying to make it like illegible. Like, oh, my handwriting's so much better than Cal's. So I have to hold my pen like this. No, he holds his pen like that throughout the whole movie. I had to look away. See, I was in a fugue state when I saw him writing with this ham-fisted hand. So I was just like, I gotta tell somebody about this. God damn it. So.
Thank you for telling me about it. I appreciate that.
Tell the world. Oh, my God.
Did and our gentle like listeners. All our gentle listeners. Gentle listeners, tell your friends about our podcast. We need more gentle listeners so that Tamara can talk about the way that Otis was writing his notes. And
oh, my God.
Otis has the cutest hair. Every time I see Otis with his two little puffers on top, I'm like, oh, it's so adorable. Oh, I can't.
Almost distracts me enough from the way he writes.
I was so distracted by his cute hair that I was like, anywho.
I wasn't. I was like, oh, cute hair. What are you doing with that pencil?
So Call sits at the desk behind him reading people's posts on Reddit who are asking for advice. And Call gives advice and it's pretty good. His username is Cornbread Lives. Or Cornbread Lives. I don't know which. Mm-hmm. When Call is emphatically typing a dump the motherfucker message to a young woman whose boyfriend wants her to lose weight, Otis turns around. What are you doing? Call yoinks his hands away from the keyboard. Nothing. Even though Otis knows Call is up to something, he chooses to ignore that and invites him to the Pirates game with Chance and Kevin. Call nopes on out of that as they aren't even friends. And he'd prefer to dick around online than hang out with them. Otis is disappointed, but not so disappointed that he leaves. First, it's family dinner time, and Otis is in. The family is eating, and Call's mom, Zelda, brings up college. Apparently, it's all these parents can think about is college. I always assumed that I was going to college, but the amount of college that my parents brought up with me was like nothing. The teachers at my school brought it up a bunch, but my parents didn't really say much of anything. There were no like, here's some of options. Look at these pamphlets or none of that. It was like a big old crickets fest. I'm sure if I hadn't been self-motivated in one way or another, though, something would have been brought up.
I don't believe my parents even I don't even know if they knew the word college. I didn't hear it from either of them. Oh wait, no, my mom went to college. She went to Evergreen Valley College. So yeah, no. And yeah, my dad went to trade school.
Yeah, but
they never had conversations with us about it.
Yeah,
shocking.
I know. What? Your parents? Whereas my parents, well, I think that your parents met in like job training school though. And I think, and my parents met in college. So I think that our parents met similarly to each other.
With very different outcomes.
Yes. Yes. Well, your dad didn't go up to your mom and say, smell my fingers. Huh?
Huh? Is that how your parents met?
Yeah. My dad was a music major. And my mom was taking some classes in the music program. And my dad had this smelly stuff that he had on his fingertips for like playing the violin. And yeah, he approached my mom and was like, smell my fingers.
Hey. Oh my God, no. Oh.
And my mom was like, okay, weirdo, leave me alone.
Oh, of the siren song of music majors. My parents' story was similarly cute. My mom said that she went after my dad because she was hungry, horny, and lonely. And my dad said he went after my mom because he really wanted her friend, but she wasn't interested. Yeah. Sweet, sweet story. Story of the ages.
Oh, both super romantical stories.
Right? Yeah.
My mom creeped out by my very socially awkward dad. And and you're...
My parents going, well, yeah, there's nobody else better.
Yeah, there you go. Oh. Carl tries suggesting that he might be interested in pursuing something creative, but mom basically has her fingers in her ears going, la, 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 la. What was that I heard?
That is so not the case anymore. God. It's such an outdated frame of thinking now. You have to go to college, really. I mean, no. If your parents are going to pay for it, that's one thing. But do you really want to go into $75,000 worth of debt to get a job that pays you $40,000 a year?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Takes you 30 years to pay off that $75,000?
Exactly. Yeah. Oy. I know. That's...
Sorry. Tangent over.
Throughout all of this, I was like, can we talk about trade school? Like, can we talk about, you know,
yes,
how, you know, yeah, going to college is important for certain careers, but other careers, you can make a fuck ton of money doing, quote, blue collar work, whatever the fuck that means. Like, it's skilled labor, you know? It's just like, yeah, oh, sweet Jesus. And you can be done quicker and you can make more money. So, yeah, fuck off, y'alls. Mm. I mean, I don't have any feelings about it or anything, though. No, I'm fine.
Obviously, yes. You're so just like monotone. I'm falling asleep over here.
Tamara likes me because I don't have any opinions and I just say yes to whatever she is.
So easygoing. Demure Corinne, that's what I call you.
Oh, so demure. So, Carl's mom basically is like, you want to be an economics major, right? Great choice. Carl's dad, Sasan, makes it pretty clear that he expects Carl to go to college. And Selda, his mom, slightly shifts the topic. All you need to focus on right now is writing your college essay. Carl sighs. I have nothing to write about. Sasan refutes this. Sure you do. What about when you saved that woman from drowning? Carl gestures to his brother. That was Arwin. His mom agrees. Yeah, that was Arwin. And Carl says, you know, we don't all look the same. Good one, Carl. So after dinner is over and Otis heads off to the Pirates game, Carl heads upstairs and instead of working on his college essay, he glances over at the portrait Kelsa painted of him and starts Googling Kelsa. Meow. Hello. Her name means brave, which is awesome and totally brings me back to the conversation we had in last week's episode where we talked about different people's meanings of names.
Yes, you were maiden, I was goddess of the palm.
Yes. And the...
And Kelsa's brave.
Was me making, waving goddess palm arms, which never failed.
And I thought you were doing the airfield man in front of used car places.
That's an air dancer, okay? That's what it's called.
Sorry. Sorry, air dancer. I'm so sorry, air dancer maiden.
Of the palms, okay. So, Kelsa's name, though, means brave, which is awesome, and he checks out her YouTube page. She's talking about being trans, the more medical side of things, hormone blockers, and the more social dating and disclosing being trans kinds of issues. Carl is thoroughly drawn in by Kelsa.
At the end of one of her videos, she poses the question, why do I want a boyfriend when I have two best friends? I got three letters for you, girl. Sex, sex, sex. Back at school during lunch, Kelsa, Chris, and Em are hanging out chatting. Chris expresses excitement over the sleepover at Kelsa's, but Em says she can't go because her mom got them a non-refundable spa package. Chris says, you've been having a lot of non-refundable spa dates. You need to work this out so you can hang. Kelsa agrees, and M swiftly changes the subject. Okay, I have a theory. The first person in your Insta story is a person you have a crush on. Chris checks hers, and it's Danny Trejo. She smugly says, that tracks. Kelsa looks at hers, and it's Call, but she doesn't say nothing. M looks at her phone. Call, I've liked him for a few weeks now. Kelsa tries to discourage this because she likes him, but won't say. What she does say is she thinks her friend could do better. Bad. Bad look on you, Kelsa.
Yes, very bad look.
I said, Kelsa, you do better, boo. This whole movie probs never would have happened if you were just honest about your feelings in the beginning and said, I like him too. Yeah. All right. And then you could have just had it out right there or none of this other BS would have happened.
I think the M would have been like, well, I said it first, so dibs.
But they would have talked. We're going to get into it because nobody knows what happens. There's some shit that goes down, as you can obviously imagine. So just picture it. If she said, I like him too at this moment in time, what a different movie it would have been. That does not happen. And we will tell you what happens when she doesn't, because she doesn't. And Chris totally encourages her to go for it. Go for it, Em. M ends up writing him a note. You're cute, heart smiley face with absolutely no name attached, and has Kelsa drop it off for her, which she reluctantly does. Kelsa grabs her books and walks past Otis, who is gleefully telling Call that he joined Parlor. It's so gnarly! And put ... Tam needs to research Parlor because she has no idea what the fuck that is.
And I did.
Kelsa drops the note and
beep, beep. Okay. Hold on.
Okay. I was like, I could do it after this if you...
No. Okay. I had to look it up, too, because I was like, what the fuck is Parler? Because Call was like, dude, Parler's fucked up. And I was like, what is this Parler? Is it sexy? Like, what's going on here? It's the social media site, like Facebook, but that Kanye helped put together like all Trumpers and whatnot. It's got all of the big ideas about Invermectin going on there. And
no, I get it. I just don't know why anybody would want to go on there. I get the concept, but I was like, why would you want to go on there? Oh.
He liked... Okay. Otis claimed that it was because he likes seeing the shit show, but we all secretly think it's because he actually vibes a little bit with what's going on there.
Perhaps. Thank you for clarifying that for me, Clarin. Now I don't have to look at it after we're done here.
Clarin? Yes.
Clarin. Shut up. You know, I have, when I talk so fast, I mispronounce things and I catch it in the edits. And I'm like, I'm not even going to say anything because that's just who I am. I say things wrong. I mispronounce things when I talk super fast. I apologize, but it's just who I am. And I hope you know what I'm talking about or what I'm trying to say at the end. Clarin.
I have to confess to you, Tam, this is the only mispronunciation of my name that I've really liked.
Oh, okay. That makes me feel a little bit better.
So I'm here for it.
Anyways, Kelsa drops a note in Call's lap and says, hi, Call, pretty flippantly without making eye contact, and quickly walks by. Otis immediately grabs the note. Is this from Kelsa? He asks, surprised. Then Chris walks by saying, hi, Call. Otis thinks it's Chris until M Sexy walks by saying sultrily, hi, Call. And Otis looks up awestruck. You're hitting that? Nice, dude. Meanwhile, Call is trying to figure out what the fuck just happened. That evening, Kelsa is snuggled in bed on her phone and she slides into Call's DMs. Hey, just wanted to clarify, and that note was actually from M. Call immediately types back, as a joke, LOL. And Kelsa responds, no, you are cute, I mean. Call sends a blushing, surprised emoji, and Kelsa smiles at her phone, going, She was practically purring at that thing. Mm-mm.
And can we just talk about what a stone-cold fox Call is?
Yeah, he's got some nice features.
He is a hunka-hunka man, and I think he's older than 18, so we're going to just appreciate that for a moment.
Well, I'll allow it. I'll allow it, Corinne. Keep objectifying if he's of age.
Yes.
Later at school, Call and Kelsa are working on a mural in the hallway for art class. They're making, hey, I think you're kind of cute eyes at each other. And Kelsa finally asks them, are you going to art school? But Call pish-poshes this. I'm not interesting enough to be an artist. Kelso with a twinkle in her eye agrees. But only because artists are assholes and you're nice. He makes a face. I hate being called nice. Kelso says with a smile, I know. I feel the same way when everybody tells me how brave I am for transitioning so young. And Tamara says, well, girl, don't call yourself Kelso because Kelso means brave. I wrote that.
Aww.
You look confused.
I was looking it up to see if I could find out how old Abu Bakr Ali is. See,
oh,
I...
God. You're not even paying attention to me? Jesus Christ. You had like a confused look on your face and I'm like, oh.
He was born in 91. 91!
91, 01, 21. Okay, okay. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
he was, he's in his 20s, but he's playing a high schooler. I'm not being horrible by talking about him being a hottie.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. Call agrees with the ridiculousness. How can you be brave when you're just being who you are? Then he asks her what she wants to study. Kelso explains that she wants to study zoology and ultimately be a nature cinematographer. He is impressed and pulls out his best Sir David Attenborough impression, narrating a passing couple while using a British accent. The human male woos the female with the ruthlessness only found in nature. The female pretends to text, ignoring his physical sexual advances. The couple passes by. Oops. End of the accent. Sorry. The couple passes by and Carl looks up at Kelso with hearts in his eyes, asking her more about her aspirations. Kelso confesses, I want to see everything, every place, every animal. They're all so unique and named after what makes them unique. She threw me off for a beat, though, because when she says that, I'm like, oh, they... What about a lion? What about a dolphin? What about a dog? Well, dogs are God spelled backwards, so there's that.
Yes. Divine.
Mm-hmm. That evening, Cornbread lives. I can't decide which one I like better. Gets on Reddit and asks his community, I'm not sure what to do. I really like this girl, but she's trans. And while that doesn't bother me, I'm concerned about all the external drama pursuing this will incur. Interspersed through his Reddit question and the answers that ensue is a little flirtation montage of Kelso and Call getting closer together, flirting, texting at night, almost holding hands, the whole nine. His Reddit friends tell him to go for it and advise that he talk to his friend. Call flashes to Otis playing video games at his house, shouting, oh my God, that is so gay, at the TV and nixes the conversation in the bud. And while Call is in the midst of reading the responses that said he should go for it, otherwise he'll always wonder what if, Arwen, his brother, bursts into his room and proclaims, you should get her flowers! Call is confused. Excuse me? And Arwen's hair even looks more pompadours than before. Mm-hmm. It is truly in its hairy glory. And explains, your Reddit post, the girl. Sometimes I use your tablet. You should really clear your browser history.
I feel like Arwen's hair gets like better and better as the movie goes on. By the end of it, I'm like, yes. That is a glorious pompadour you have there, Arwen.
I was, yes, so expecting it to get bigger and more glorious each scene he's in. But, like, in the next scene or the one after that, he's wearing a hat. And I was like, oh, thwarted. Damn it. The higher the hair, the closer to God, Arwen. You go ahead and pump that door up. Call is pissed at his brother, but thinks, he may have a point. And while Call is using Reddit as his confessional, Kelso is using her YouTube channel as her own confessional and talking about crushes. She knows Em likes Call, but she's catching the feels too.
The next day in school, Call arrives late to history class with some flowers sticking out of his backpack. And Otis is intrigued. Who are the flowers for? He whispers. Mr. Alderdice immediately hushes them. And students continue to read from a pamphlet, thank you, public school system, about Pittsburgh. A few moments pass and Otis can't help himself. The flowers, he demands. Call hastily hisses M to appease him. But this sets off an unfortunate chain of events as Chris, who overhears them, group texts Kelso and M, letting M know that Call bought her flowers. Kelso gets called on to read from the scintillating Pittsburgh pamphlet and is distracted seeing her phone blow up while she's reading. Call sees the whole thing going down and is all full of fuck my life.
It sucks too, because you condensed it, but like Otis literally asked him like 4 times and was like, yeah, who are they for? Who are they for? And he didn't tell him, and then he stole his pamphlet. And I'm like, dude, back the fuck off. Do you like call? Is that why you're so like adamant? Like, Jesus, get your own life and stay out of your friends.
Oh. I think he's just excited for him because Call is so reserved that he hasn't like been going after his lady. He needs to know.
Well, he didn't have to be so dickish about it. And also, as a side note, is Call's signature color brown?
I think it is.
Up until this, first he was wearing like a brown sweatshirt, like the first day of that we see him in school. Mm-hmm. And then the next day he's wearing a brown t-shirt with the matching fucking phone case. And the next time we see him in a scene or two, he's wearing like a brown jumpsuit. And I'm like, okay, I see you, Earth Tone Call. He's muted and understated.
He's like you. Like, you two have an affinity for each other.
No. I am beige. He is brown. There is a difference.
Yeah. You're both like earth tones. You're just sandy. And he's more like a loamier soil.
I also like black and gray. Sheesh.
Ooh, shush. You're just thrilling me with your extensive color palette.
You know what? We all can't be as bright and cheery as you, okay? Nor do we all want to be. We have a refined, understated color palette that you can interchange pieces with easily.
Oh, I interchange pieces all over the place with my, as Tamara's implying, garish wardrobe.
Did not say garish. Didn't even skitter around garish. You're the one that said that, not me.
I have a parade of color in my clothes. It is true. But, you know, you have the blue eyes and you gotta, like, wear the colors to, like, bling them up, you know? And when you have the red face, you have to distract from the red face.
And I need to bring out my brown eyes with earth tones.
Whoa.
That doesn't mean I don't have a lot of color in my soul.
You have so much color in your soul that you need to wear the earth tones. Otherwise, there'd be such a color explosion, a kaleidoscope, a cacophony of colors that you'd just be like, yeah. Rainbow bright on her unicorn, riding the rainbow. And while I'm very much into that, a lot of people would be jealous and then there'd just be issues.
Yes, it's my secret identity to cover up my colorfulness. My inner colorfulness needs to be masked by my outer muted, understated look.
You're doing it because you want people to get to know you for you and not for your cacophony of garish outfits. I get it.
No, I just like it. I don't give a fuck what other people think. I just like it.
I think you rock the, like, desert boho chic look excellently. But it would not be so cute on me. After class, in the hall, Em approaches Call flirtatiously, suggesting that she sure could use some spring in her life.
Wow. Subtle, Em. Real, real subtle.
My seasonal affective disorder has got me down. Call looks confused. It's October and sunny and warm outside. Em flips her hair sassily as she walks off. I'm just saying is all. Otis sees Em leaving and congratulates Call on being the man. And Call rushes off to the bathroom calling his brother Arwin, which I'm like, this whole scene, I'm like, how is that even possible? But Arwin seems to have some magic about him because...
Yeah, I guess. It's the pompadour.
It's the pompadour. He is like, I don't know, an eighth grader, and he is sitting at a table meant for two, but he's in the middle of two very attractive girls. Who are totally digging Arwin and his pompadour. So...
And are not minding each other. There's no, like, vindictiveness across the table. They're just like, we'll share him. It's fine.
Yes. They're probably
there's
besties.
There's enough Arwin to go around. See, it could have happened with Em and Kelsa.
I don't think so. No. Like, the whole biggest problem of that is that fucking, it doesn't matter how much M has feelings for fucking Call. If Call doesn't have feelings for M, there's no there there.
There's no there there.
But Call has an issue. He calls his brother Arwen. I totally fucked up. Due to a series of unfortunate events, M now thinks the flowers are for her. And if I give them to Kelsa, all girly hell is going to break loose. I think I'm going to give them to M. Arwen asks the simplest of questions. Do you like M? Call replies, no. Arwen asks, do you like Kelsa? Call replies, yes. And Arwen cuts to the chase. You can't make everyone happy and you're going to hurt people along the way. Stop being a perpetually passive pussy and give Kelsa the flowers.
Opposite. Sick burn, little bro.
Seriously. Two girls pop into opposite sides of the frame. Don't be a pussy, Call, they say. The camera pulls out and Arwen's middle school teacher demands his phone. Arwen protests. I'm using it as a calculator. But the teacher insists. This is language arts. And Arwen retorts, putting his right arm around the girl sitting on his right side and his left arm around the girl sitting on his left side. Why is your generation so resistant to technology? The teacher rolls his eyes. I'm 25. Oh, Arwen. Back at the high school, some shit is about to go down. It's lunch, and Chris, Kelsa, and M are chatting at a table together. M is sharing about how she has a great idea for a place that she and Call can go together when Call walks up to the trio holding the flowers. Who will Call give those flowers to? We'll find out after the break. And we're back.
I'm just going to cry out in pain for the next section.
No. 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 We last left off. Call was standing in front of Chris, M, and Kelsa with the flowers. And I'm yelling at the screen, for fuck's sake, give Kelsa the flowers, but not there. But Call can't hear me. And he thrusts the flowers towards, not M, but Kelsa, which is the right choice-ish, if the three of them weren't all sitting together.
In the middle of a packed cafeteria with all eyes on all of them.
Mm-hmm. You said all girly hell is going to break loose. And if you do it this way, yeah, damn skippy all girly hell is going to break loose. He thrusts the flowers towards Kelsa, saying, these are for you. Kelsa looks at them like I looked at the bouquet of flowers that fell at my feet when I was a teenager going to a wedding, all full of, nope, 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 not me. I'm not picking up that bouquet. Chris says, oh, shit. And M looks like she's just been spurned. And in many ways, she has. M gets up and leaves.
In a huff.
In a huff. Call is standing there holding the flowers, and Kelsa grabs them and runs after M. Chris gives him a look of, you done fucked up, and I can't help but agree. Oh, Call.
Who is standing in front of his locker full of self-loathing as he hears one girl say to another, M's crying in the bathroom. But wait, it gets even better for Call, because Otis approaches and says, his voice dripping with disgust, bro, you gave the flowers to Kelsa? You know she's a dude, right?
Ugh.
Call looks at him warily. He doesn't have time for Otis's shit. And he says, I gotta go, dude. He walks briskly past his friend. And then later on that night, when he's at home, he texts Kelsa, hey, but she doesn't respond back. So the next day, he's demoralized, walking into school. When he sees Kelsa, he nervously says, hi. She wearily responds, hi. He asks her if she liked the flowers. Just then the elevator they're standing next to opens and she pulls him into the empty elevator because she knows how to have a private conversation in the appropriate setting. And indignantly says, what the hell, Call? You did that in front of M? If you're trying to prove that you're not nice, congratulations, you did it. The door closes behind them and apparently the elevator light is out because they stand in the darkened elevator hashing it out. Call defends himself. No, I wasn't trying to prove anything. And she points out, M likes you. Call stammers, yeah, but I like you. He rushes on. And if you don't like me, then I hope we can still be friends. But if you don't want to be friends, I'll leave you alone. Kelsa raises an eyebrow. I didn't say that. He looks at her with a little more hope and a little less desperation and says, so you just want to be friends? She backs away from him, leaning against the elevator wall. Well, I didn't say that either. I like you, but you've made a real mess of things. He leans against the wall next to her, their shoulders touching, and says, they were wildflowers. Kelsa gets a small smile on her face. I noticed. And he continues, because they're unique like you. Look, I've probably already lost a friend over this, and you probably have as well. How about we ditch the what-ifs and go out there together and live our lives and see what happens? He stands in front of her, smiling coyly, and extends his hand. She takes it tentatively. They interlock their fingers and stand in front of the elevator doors. Cow Whisper yells, yes! As they open and they walk out into the hall hand in hand. Carl pulls out his Sir David Attenborough voice once again. In a daring move, the human mites publicly display their affection. Will their colony accept them, or will there be carnage? He walks through the class as all their schoolmates kneel around and chatter excitedly about their union. Carl and Kelsa nervously say goodbye to each other, and he boldly kisses her on the forehead, which Corinne actually thinks is super sweet in this instance. But I think this is ... ... because Corinne obviously wants me to comment on the forehead kiss. My comment is, it was a cop-out. He should have at least gone for the cheek or lips.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Otis sees Carl's kiss and confronts him. What's going on? Are you gay?
God.
Carl denies this, but Otis continues to push. You know, I can accept it if you're gay, but not if you're in denial. He is done with his friend who clearly doesn't understand. Okay, whatever, Otis, and walks away.
Okay, now just to be clear for the people in the back, not trying to insult any gentle listeners, but if you identify as female and you date somebody who identifies as male, they could be a trans male, they could be a cis male, you're not gay, you're straight. You're dating someone of the opposite sex. Otis, thank you.
PSA from Corinne Edding. And the friendship front isn't going great for Kelsa either. She passes Em in the hall, who gives her the side eye. And she is apparently also ditching her old posse because she has a new replacement friend and walks on past sucking her teeth. Mm-hmm. Later, Kelsa and Chris are talking, and Chris is like, Em needs to be a better friend. But Kelsa's more sympathetic. I mean, can you blame her? I can. Chris responds unsympathetically. Yes, I do. She just needs to get it together. And then Carl approaches them, and Chris eyes him with a devilish smile. Well, you set the school on fire. Kelsa and Carl are the only people the entire school is talking about. He chuckles nervously as Chris leaves, saying over her shoulder, okay, we'll see you two lovebirds later. Kelsa and Carl stare nervously at each other, and eventually they both ask the other on a date. Cal holds out his hands and Kelsa grabs them, and it is so sweet. And then I put something else about Cal's signature color brown, but we've already discussed that. I'm obviously hell-bent on Cal's color palette.
Uh-huh. That works very nicely with your sand color palette. It all just coordinates beautifully together.
See, maybe we're just like monochromatic skin and clothes. Like, he's a little browner than me, so he's brown.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I'm a little beiger than him, so I am beige.
Yeah. And me just wearing, like, hot pinky red clothing just doesn't seem super cute. Thank you. Carl and Kelsa go on a date to the Phipps Conservatory and Botanical Gardens. And it's
what the
gorgeous.
Fuck is that? You said it a couple of times. Phipps.
Phipps. I don't know what Phipps.
Yeah, what is that?
It's probably a rich person who created a conservatory and botanical gardens.
Damn it. I thought there was some underlying story that you had a personal, like, connection to it.
It's a real place, is what it is.
I figured. Yeah.
And it's gorgeous. There are beautiful plants and flowers all around them, and they banter about everything from sea cucumbers to lizard people. The topic eventually meanders around the state of their friendships. For Kelsa and Em, it's non-existent. And for Cal and Otis, they're weird. It's just off. Being with Kelsa has given him the opportunity to reflect on all the messed up stuff that Otis said that he never called him out on. Call was so invested in being Call and Oates.
That's so damn cute.
It's so cute. With his friend, but he says, that's not even my name. Kelsa is confused, and gentle listeners, prepare yourself for some very bad, but I'm trying hard, pronunciations coming up.
I know we did you dirty with all the bad accents last episode. This time we're trying harder.
I know. I, on one hand, feel bad. On the other hand, how could we do that movie without doing those accents? I don't know. Why do you hate me? I mean, you can't, like, yeah, it's impossible. I am sorry, all our fabulous Greek listeners out there, for my terrible Greek accent. But I was trying. I really was.
Our terrible Greek accents. I'm not saying mine was any better.
I didn't think you were pointing a finger at me, but I was just speaking for myself. I wasn't going to bring you down with me.
I will jump into that bad accent cart with you. But continue, Corinne. I have faith in you. I think you can redeem yourself with this.
Call says, that's not even my name. Kelsa is confused. Wait, what's your name? He replies, Khalid. Kelsa is big on the power of names and questions him. Why don't you like that? And Call replies, people can't pronounce the... Oh my God, I can't...
Really?
I was doing this just fine the other day. I don't know what's going on with my... People
Perhaps
can't pronounce...
it's these seven H's you put in the name. It's threw you off.
But people can't pronounce the... sound. They pronounce it like Khalid. Kelsa scoffs. Khalid? Like you're dumb and broke? Call says, yeah, and no disrespect to that name, but it's a different name. But my brother Arwin gets the Anglo name. Kelsa scoffs again. Arwin? Sounds like a serial killer. Call takes a moment to reflect. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. His brother is unique, that is for sure. He trails off and they both laugh. Kelsa is determined. Okay, from now on, I'm going to call you by your name. Call it. She looks at him hopefully, and he gives her a response. It's Khalid. She tries again. Khalid. He says, close enough, and then lets her know that he likes the meaning of her name and admits to Googling her. She asks cautiously, did you find out anything else? And he mentions her YouTube videos, which she's not thrilled about. She doesn't want the people at school to know. She doesn't want her mom to know. And she uses those videos as a way to talk about her transness and to hopefully help others understand themselves better. But in her regular life, she just wants to be Kelsa, not trans Kelsa. Call assures her, you're Kelsa to me. And they share a look. The kiss tractor beam is on, and he starts moving in for the kiss. When kisses interruptus. A couple passes them on the bridge they're standing on, and Call immediately gets self-conscious and backs off. They spend the afternoon goofing around Phipps, and as they're heading out, Call confesses that he may not be interested in going to college. He likes the idea of training in computer-aided drafting. He says, every bench and handrail, someone created. So why create paintings and sculptures when you can create life? Kelsa thinks this is cool. Your life doesn't have to look like anyone else's. It's your you. Take it from me. And she holds out her hand, and he accepts, saying, hand-holding round two. She replies, well, since you're not doing it, I'ma do it. Call replies sheepishly, I'm a dignified coward. And they walk off. By the time he's walked her to her house, it's dark, and they awkwardly say goodbye to each other with a half hug and his patented forehead kiss.
Yes. No.
Kelsa starts walking up the steps when she pauses. Wait. Call stops and Kelsa asks, you want to make out? Call pauses and then says enthusiastically / nervously, yeah, yes, yes, I do. And they kiss and it's a good one. He lifts her up and kisses her. And then they move to the hilly, grassy front yard and things get awkward once again. And they part ways, but this time on a much better, exciting note than previously.
When Kelsa's mom gets home and they're having dinner, she asks, where were you all day? Kelsa confesses that she was on a date, and Mom is thrilled. But Kelsa's very tight-lipped about the whole thing. Law of averages. At Cal's house over dinner, Cal lets his parents know that he has a girlfriend, and they are thrilled. And Arwen's thrilled that it's Kelsa. However, he also lets his parents know that he's going to Pittsburgh Technical College, and this they are not happy about. They think he should go to a four-year college, you know, just in case, so he can have a prestigious job like Corinne, working as a receptionist in an office. Thanks, BA degree. She wrote that, not me. But Carl responds to his parents, "It's my me," puzzling them and hopefully shutting down this conversation temporarily. Back at school, Chris yoinks Carl into the girls' bathroom and threatens him. She's now blonde-haired instead of blue. I like the blue hair very much more.
Me too. But she does look super scary with the blonde hair, and this works well in the scene.
Shoo, yes, fair, 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 yep. I just think it was the expression on her face, no matter what her hair color was. Although she looks a dynamite with lavender hair. That yes. also is coming up.
Oh, so good.
She asks Carl if he tried anything funny with her bestie. He stutters a, "Yeah, I made her laugh." She's not getting her point through, so she pushes him hard against the wall and says, "If you're trying to fetishize my friend, step the fuck off." But he insists, "I like Kelsa for who she is, and that's it." She slams him up against the wall. "You better not be fucking with her." And he assures her, "No, it's not like that. I'm not that type of guy." She pats his shirt. "Okay, I didn't think you were, but I needed to check." Carl says softly, "I'm not." And her face softens and she smiles. "Do you think I'm scary?" He agrees. "Yeah, really scary." Chris nods happily. "Good." And they part ways. We find out from Kelsa's YouTube video that Chris was recently broken up with by her boyfriend. Cut to Chris donning a hockey mask, pummeling her ex-bo Mike's house with paintball pellets while a terrified Kelsa looks on, which perhaps explains the overzealous questioning of Carl. Kelsa also muses about dating and how while she doesn't need a man, she's happy with the one she's got. He's a good one and gets her. She's been so worried about people either rejecting her for being trans or dating her specifically because she's trans. It's nice to be with somebody who is just dating her for her. She asks her audience if that's horrendously cheesy, but answers herself with a, "You know what? I don't care." Meanwhile, on Reddit, Carl's community wants an update on his initial dating question, and he tells him that he's proudly dating a trans girl, and he's never been happier. But there was a fallout with his friendship with Oates, who apparently felt like Carl should be either friends with him or Kelsa, and there was no all-of-the-above option. It's spring now, and while Kelsa's in the locker room, she overhears Em talking with her new friend, Megan, saying that the reason why Mike broke up with Chris was that she was poking holes in their condoms.
Ugh.
Kelsa's thought bubble says, "Aw, hell no," and she approaches Em. "You know that's not true." Em is indignant. "Can't you stop stalking us?" Kelsa retorts, "Can you stop with the rumors about Chris?" And I'm like, when did Em become the supervillain, and what the fuck does she have against Chris? Chris didn't do shit to her, so why is she over there spreading nasty-ass rumors about her former friend?
Because Chris remained friends with Kelsa, and if you can't ditch Kelsa, then you're out of her book.
Goddamn backstabbing sons of bitches. It's all or nothing with these people.
Yes.
Anyways. Em raises her eyebrows. "Is it really a rumor if it's true?" And Kelsa repeats, "It's not true." Em says, "Well, you should know you're her friend." "Oh, I forgot. You don't give a shit about your friends."
Oof.
Kelsa responds, "Well, apparently you don't either," and starts to leave. That's when I wrote, "What the fuck did Chris do to Em? Damn." Em stops Kelsa with her arm, or their arms get tangled. It's not really clear. And Kelsa pushes her away, sending Em over the tiny locker bench onto the ground and breaking her finger in the process. Kelsa is super surprised and apologetic, but Em is pissed. "You broke my finger!" She gets up and storms off to the nurse's office with Kelsa shouting apologies after her. Otis sees Em storming off and follows in hot pursuit. Where she ultimately goes to the nurse's office and tries to get some strong painkillers, but the nurse says the only painkiller you're going to have here is some herbal tea. So if you don't want that, I got nothing for you, sweetheart. Here's a splint. Have a nice day.
Very nice. Carl finally meets Kelsa's mom, Celine, when he comes by the house to pick up Kelsa for a party. While Kelsa is getting ready, Celine admits that she was hanging out at the house because she wanted to check out Carl, but he seems really nice. By this point, he's already folding her laundry and engaging in casual conversation with her. Celine says, "Kelsa is set on going away to school." Just then, Kelsa pops in. Did I hear my name? Celine keeps chatting, saying pointedly towards her daughter. But I always tell her there's no place safer than at home with me.
Kelsa objects.
Mom, law of averages. And we finally find out what that is because Call asks and Celine explains. It's a rule that we have that I'm not allowed to ask her anything that the average mom won't ask the average girl. And I say, what isn't off limits to the average mom to ask about the average girl? I'm like, my parents are like, we can ask you about anything.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Everything's fair game.
Yep. Just then, Celine's phone chimes. I'm sorry, I got to get to the hospital, but Call, don't you try anything with my daughter. There are cameras here, there, everywhere, so she is never alone. Celine gestures dramatically around her before grabbing her stethoscope and a bag and heading out the door. As soon as she leaves, Kelsa goes in for the kiss, and Call quickly steps away. What about the cameras? Kelsa rolls her eyes. There are no cameras. And with those magic words, Call and Kelsa start making out. Call's stripping off his shirt and the two of them moving to the couch. Things are hot and heavy until they're interrupted by Chris banging on the window, looking at them, sitting on the couch that's on the other side of the window. Hello, you're not answering your phone. Kelsa and Call pop up from the couch that is directly under the window. And Chris yells, oh, it's like that. You're getting it on as soon as Mama heads out the door. I see you. Kelsa yells at Chris through the window, making a shooing motion. Go to your car. I'm guessing she arrived early for the pickup. And Call puts on his shirt, saying, well, that was awkward. As soon as Chris retreats, Call asks Kelsa, did you like that? Kelsa self-consciously says, yeah, there wasn't anything I didn't like. Call smiles shyly. Well, what do you like? Kelsa admits she doesn't know what she likes, and Call is okay with that. He calls her beautiful, and it's Kelsa's turn to smile shyly before they head out the door to meet with Chris.
This reminds me of a conversation me and Larry had when we first started dating, because he was like, what do you like? And I'm like, I've been with the same person for 20 years. I have no fucking idea. Uh-huh. Like, I know what I like, but like, imagining it with somebody else or even envisioning my life like separate was so like crazy. And I was just like dumbfounded. I'm like, I can't believe I can't even answer that fucking question. And he's like, that's okay. We'll find out together. And I'm like, I like you. I really like you.
I always say to guys when they ask me that, I am like, it just depends on the person, because I can be really into kissing, but if you're a shitty kisser, I don't want to be kissing you. I want to be doing other things. And there's things that there's no way I will let guy A do, but guy B, hell yeah, can do. Just matters on the talents. Different people got different skills.
Oh, dang. Then Larry's good at A, B, C, D, E, definitely F, a little bit of G, some H, I, J, K. No, I'm just kidding.
So he's basically just like,
go for a while for vote.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
And I'm like, dee, 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 dee.
Let's You're just see. Avoiding doing the shittiest party ever is really what
I am. I'm just, what'd you have for lunch today, Corinne?
Well, my boss man bought me a delicious.
No, that's right. That's right.
Meal. Thank you very much.
And back to the show. Chris, Call, and Kelsa go to a house party where Chris dances flirtatiously with another guy to show her ex, Mike, that she is so over him. Call and Kelsa are also dancing and having a good time until Kelsa does a kick on the dance floor and M spins into her leg, and M is pissed. Kelsa's had enough and pulls her aside for a conversation. Okay, I've had enough of this shit. What do you want from me? I've been trying to apologize, but I get it. I was never supposed to like anybody. M spits back. You can like anyone you like, just not the guy I told you I had a crush on. Kelsa's indignant. You can't choose who you like, and I certainly can't choose who likes me back. One time I put myself first, and I have to pay for it the rest of my life? M accuses, "One time, do you have any idea how much I've given up being your friend? Do you think it's easy being your friend? Oof. Or your boyfriend for that matter? Call is probably only dating you for woke points."
Oof.
When M is mean just to be mean, Kelsa realizes that this conversation is going nowhere and leaves. Oy.
Oh,
Kelsa goes off to a very stylish bathroom. We don't see the whole bathroom, but the wallpaper is on point.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
And Call goes over to check on her, but she is stoic and shut off. She doesn't want Call to be there for her, and I'm sure the comment of Call dating her for woke points is echoing around in her head, regardless of its validity. Kelsa lets Call know, "I don't need you to save me," and he is left feeling very confused about everything. Ugh. She says it's trans stuff, but does not want to elaborate.
He was like, "Things were going so good. All I want to do is be supportive of her. What the fuck is going on now?"
It's complicated. Meanwhile, M goes to pour herself a drink and Otis checks in on her. He says, "You okay?" M shakes her head. "I'm fine. It's Kelsey who has the problems." Otis tries to sympathize with her. "Oh yeah, I heard she stole your man." Kelsa retorts, "She didn't steal anything. She's a conniving bitch."
Oof.
He tries placating her. "Look, I get it. She stole my best friend, too." He pauses for a moment and asks, "You want to get back at her?" M looks at him, and he continues, "I'm pretty liberal in everything," says every person that's fucking crooked as shit. "But it sounds to me like you were assaulted in a female-only space."
Ooh.
That is right up there with, "I'm a feminist. I love my mom."
Yeah, exactly.
And the next thing you know, M is in the principal's office talking about how the locker room is a woman's space and how Kelsa brought her socialized male energy into it. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
M swears, "I'm okay with her lifestyle. I really am, but it stops being okay when she enters our space to assault us." I hate this part so much.
Oof.
The principal nods sympathetically, and we sense not good things for Kelsa. I just wish they didn't go there to perpetuate the stereotype that women lie to get their ways. Oy.
But it's also, like, a big issue with being trans is being able to use bathrooms that associate with your identity, and the big problem with that is that they frame the trans people as being predators, and so it was an important plot point.
It was fucked up is what it was. Like, I don't care how, it's just a shitty bang bang little section that I hated.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that being a teenager is rough, and negotiating social mores and figuring out all of that stuff is really hard, and we all have our regrettable moments. Shit, I've had my regrettable moments in my 20s and 30s and 40s too, but we all have our regrettable moments where we make the wrong decision, and we all have our better moments where we do the right thing. So, you know, it's a sucky situation. So I entitled this next section, "Just When Things Can Get Shittier, They Do." Yay! And we find out through Kelsa's YouTube vlog that things have gotten worse in her world. Now she's got to go to some forgotten basement level of the school to a gender-neutral bathroom that hasn't been cleaned since the 90s. And she explains, "Whenever anyone looks at me, all they see is gender. I can't wait to get out of here and go where no one knows who I am. I'm so discouraged, I don't even want to leave my room."
Okay, aside from all that shittiness, I would love to have my own bathroom in fucking high school. Aside from the point that it hadn't been cleaned from the 90s, if there was like a small tucked away bathroom out of like in the middle of nowhere in the school, I would have loved that. Not saying that Kelsa loves that, but I would say me as a person would love that.
Oh, yeah. No.
I was always so self-conscious about going to the bathroom. And, you know, I was one of those people that if somebody was in the bathroom with me, I just hold it until they left.
Oh.
Like, nobody could know I'm peeing.
Well, we all know that you're too beautiful to have biological functions, Tamara. So that makes sense.
No. Now I'm old enough to say, like, yes, I poo and I pee and I am proud of it. It's a natural part of life. Uh-huh. And I will full on have a conversation in the stall next to you while I'm doing it. Now I don't care. But back in high school, I was like, no, nobody can hear me tinkle.
I was just like, oh, the cigarettes and the hairspray smells and everything. Yeah. No, if there was, aside from the obvious problems that Kelsa is going through being trans and having to use the bathroom out in the middle of nowhere, if I happened upon that bathroom on my own and nobody used it, I'd just bring a little mopperoo with me to do a little Swiffer of that shit, and I would hang out. Like, that would be my office. I would hang out there. Like, any free time, I'd be like, bloop, this is my special room.
You need to go to my office.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
I might even, like, change the sign on the outside so it, you know.
Says Corinne. Oh, I'm sorry. Clarin.
Kyle watches the videos and gets a series of texts from Kelsa. Look, I know that you want to help, but I'm fine. Seriously, I'm fine. And if by fine you mean totally demoralized and isolating yourself, then yeah, you're completely fine. However, the shitstorm is about to really start pouring down because Call, being a well-intentioned but perhaps misguided fucker, shares her video her bathroom struggles on Reddit, and it catches on like fire.
Why did you do that, Call? Why did you do that?
Kelsa gets a dose of that fire when the morning after she posts her video, her mom wakes her up furious. One, she had no idea that Kelsa had a YouTube channel. And two, Kelsa has gone viral. So three, mom is not okay with any of it. And she insists that Kelsa take down her channel. She thinks it's important to keep her safe. Mother and daughter argue because that's Kelsa's safe space where she gets to express herself. And her mom is trying to take it away from her. They have a huge verbal altercation and nobody is feeling good that morning.
Me neither. I was like, I understand you, Kelsa, and I understand you, Mom, and you both have valid points.
I feel like this is like my bridesmaid discomfort is now like on you with all of this situation here. But things are about to get spicier at school. Call is washing his hands in the restroom when a couple of girls walk in, greet him, and try to use the urinals. When he exits, he sees a couple of guys walking into the women's restroom talking about how gender roles are bunk. Kelsa walks in on Chris with a megaphone, surrounded by a mass of students, chanting, "We stand with Kelsa! With Kelsa we stand!" over and over. But Kelsa is standing amongst them, and none of them notice her. Chris is announcing that everyone should use the opposite of their cisgendered facilities. And Kelsa yoinks her from the center of the mass of students yelling at her. What do you think you're doing? Chris says that she's trying to help. And Kelsa is in the midst of burning it all down with zero fucks left to give. She yells back at Chris, "This has more to do with you and you wanting attention than me." That was not the place that Chris was coming from, but Chris hustles off to try and undo the protest she has started. Meanwhile, Call tracks down Kelsa, and Kelsa basically accuses Call of being with her for woke points. She doesn't need his help, and he should go back to Otis. They deserve each other. A group of students follows Kelsa and Call as they argue. The students have their phones out, recording it all. Kelsa runs off to the rooftop basketball courts or some kind of, I don't know, urban rooftop PE area. And Call follows after her, calling, "Kelsa, what's going on?" But he doesn't hear from her. Instead, he hears from Otis. "What's wrong, Call? You don't want to suck him off?" Call is pissed. "What did you call her?" Otis stands firm. "Him. Remember, it's a him." Call walks towards Otis, stating, "She is a her." Otis continues, "He has a mental disorder, and you know what I think? You do too. Yeah, you have a mental disorder."
call shouts, "No, you do, you illiterate fuck." Otis pushes him, and it's obvious it's on. They are encircled by a bunch of students with their cell phones out, but I can tell from the way they're circling each other that they don't know how to fight. I know this from personal experience because I don't know how to fight, but I have unfortunately been in one. Eventually, they grab each other's hair and pull, and both of them are yelling, "Hair, hair, hair!" And eventually the fight is broken up and the students around them are like, "This is lame." But not before Call actually manages to get a solid punch in. Otis storms off and Call storms off in the opposite direction.
Where the fuck is this school? The teacher comes up and is like, "Call, Otis, what are you doing?" And just stands there like, "Boys, boys, stop fighting." And they just like go off in their own direction. And I'm like, I would have got grabbed by the arm and dragged to the fucking principal's office. Like, this school is very mild and I just don't understand it at all.
I don't know. I didn't get dragged by the arm to the principal's office when I got into my fight at Shepherd. Woo! You know those teachers' new fights were breaking out all the time. And like, you could just see the trail of students and know what was going on. And the teachers were like...
That was Shepherd, though. That was the fucking jungle.
Yeah!
Campus and Guns N' Roses. Welcome to the jungle! You must see every day! I'm talking about Piedmont, the milder school, the high school.
Not the middle school where it's survival of the...
Not the middle school. Not no, even the middle the school fittest, is like yeah. Anything fucking goes. No.
The middle school is a cage fight. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. There were so many places along the perimeter where the like fence was pulled up from people just trying to escape.
Yes.
Quickly. For various reasons. When Call gets home, he's confronted by his parents. Otis's mother called, letting him know that the two of them got into a fight and Otis has a black eye. Call's mom admits they searched his internet history and asked if he's transgendered. Call, irritated, answers, "No, my girlfriend is." His dad says to his mom, "See, I told you he's just gay." Call has had enough. "Oh my God," he says with exasperation as he walks off into his room. Later, Call's mom comes up and gently approaches him, softly asking, "Talk to me." Call says to his mom as he's lying on the bed, "I'm just sick of everything. Being called gay, crazy, I'm just over it all." Mom replies, "I know you don't like to be called kind, but you are so kind, which is why you see this girl for who she really is." Mm. Call turns over to his side, his back to his mom. "Well, it's too late because she broke up with me." She leans over and whispers softly to him, "Then she has bigger problems because... she's an idiot." He chuckles softly as she spoons and cuddles her son, and it's a very sweet moment.
Mm-hmm.
Amber, surprisingly, comes to Jesus. Did you meant to write Amber? Is Amber her really name?
That's her real name, yeah. M is short
okay.
for Amber.
Amber, I like it. Am surprisingly comes to Jesus. During a meeting regarding Kelsa being able to use the women's locker room, Am's mom, Am, Kelsa's mom, and Kelsa are in a room with the principal, and the moms are fighting. Kelsa and Em are sitting there looking miserable when the principal says that Kelsa can't use the locker room because she assaulted another student. Finally, Kelsa gives Em a look that says, "Are you going to clear this shit up or am I?" And Em finally speaks up. "Kelsa didn't assault me and my finger, it was an accident. Furthermore, this isn't who I am or what I believe or what I want to be. I was angry and made a rash decision and it all got out of hand. I'm sorry." With that settled, Kelsa can use the locker room and Em leaves. And the moms are, whew, they're heated. It was an uncomfortable situation that I did not like watching because the moms were going at each other like rabid mama bears. There's one thing I say about moms is they can be like totally throwing shade and polite at the same time. "Well, thank you. Nice seeing you too." When they walked away.
There was one time when my sister wanted to use this coupon for, there was this clothing store in Capital Square Mall, mm-hmm. and I can't remember what it's called, but she wanted to use a coupon for
Montgomery
it.
Wards.
No, it was not. It was like the trendy store, which I can't even believe there was something halfway trendy in Capital Square Mall, but it was not Montgomery Wards, which is now Target. But so she tries to use the coupon, but the guy says, no, the coupon doesn't count. Like, and she's like, yeah, it does. There's nothing in the fine print that says that it shouldn't work for this. And, but the person refuses it. So my sister goes home and tells my mom, and my mom goes to the store with my sister and the coupon. And she's like, you are going to take this coupon because it does apply to that item of clothing that she wants to use it on. And if you do not take this coupon, I will be out front of the store with a sign protesting and letting people know about your business practices.
Your mom's raw.
My mom was like, what she wants to buy with it is ugly, and yet I will...
I don't want to pay full price for it.
Seriously. My mom was like, you want to use that coupon, baby girl? I got your back. Speaking of that, the next section is called Big Mama Love and Making Amends.
Fitting.
Yes. After the meeting, Kelsa and her mom pull up to the house. Kelsa says, thanks for helping me out today, but you didn't have to. Kelsa's mom, with her to the moon and back love, insists that she'll be there for her daughter always. Kelsa explains, I just don't want to be a burden. I know I'm the reason you and Dad split, and me being trans is the reason why my relationship didn't work. Mama Celine isn't having it. Your dad and I split for a million different reasons that had to do with him and me and nothing to do with you. You are the one thing we got right, and what's happening now with him not choosing to be in your life is his mistake, his choice, his life. Who you were then, who you are now. Huh. I don't know what that's bad sentence. I love who you were then, and I love who you are now. Kelsa protests. Law of averages. And Mama Celine persists. Law of averages is a fallacy. It's not real. You can say it as many times as you want, but you are not average. You are exceptional. You are my incredibly exceptional, beautiful daughter, and what is unique about you does not make you hard to love. For anyone who is worthy of you, you are the easiest thing to love in the world. Unless you're pushing people away. Do you hear me? She hugs her daughter with big mama love. And then in true mama fashion says, but I'm not sorry about that video. You keep it down. Kelsa says that she took down her channel. And Mama Celine tells her that she has a few months before Kelsa leaves for college. And to make the most of it. Kelsa texts Call. Can we meet? And next we see Call tapping Kelsa on her shoulder at Phipps. The place of their first date. She turns around with a bouquet of flowers for Call, explaining that someone gave her flowers once and they were the worst and best thing that has ever happened to her. Call loves getting the flowers. They awkwardly talk over each other, and after acknowledging the awkwardness of it all, he pulls a bouquet of flowers from behind his back and gives them to her. They kiss, and Kelsa digs it, dropping her flowers. Because of the passion. Oh, the passion.
See, that's how you avoid a kisses interruptus. I can't kiss you because we're both holding flowers. You just drop that shit and you go in for it.
Yes.
You go in for it. Next, we hear Carl narrating his Reddit update, and we get a montage, tosh, tosh. Kelsa got into UCLA OBS because she's the smartest girlfriend ever. Call's parents got on board with him going to Pittsburgh Technical College. We see his mom, Dad, and Arvid proudly holding a college brochure. They spin it around to show the community college emblem as they shout, "You're staying home!"
Aww.
And tackle him with hugs and love. Call and Kelsa graduated from high school and spent every day of the summer together. Meanwhile, Kelsa updates her audience on her YouTube channel because her mom finally gave her computer back. She tells him that she's previously been so focused on survival, but now she realizes that she can be soft and flawed, can make mistakes and let herself go, and be loved for herself. She says, I'm excited about what's to come and feel like anything is possible. The name of the movie!
Aww.
And in the end, we see Kelsa and Call at Phipps for a final date. The place is closing in 5 minutes, and they still haven't had the talk. They sit there hand in hand looking sad and trying to put off the inevitable. They agree to break up because long distance is going to be too complicated with her at UCLA and him still in Pittsburgh. Kelsa tells Call that she's looking forward to going beyond existing and moving into thriving and and moving into thriving and exploring. We get a sweet montage of all their tender moments they shared, stolen looks, laughs, talks, and just being silly. Mm. They both look sad, but the sitting is prolonging the agony, so Kelsa says she's going to walk home on her own. She starts off, and Cal says, "Wait!" She stops, and he kisses the shit out of her. And then we get a montage of all their previous wonderful kisses. Call says, "I love you," and then asks her a final question because he has to know absolutely everything about her before they part. "What's your favorite animal?" Kelsa thinks and realizes that she doesn't know. But they still part ways, and she walks off gloriously into the night, her top sparkling, off into her destiny. See those shirts that she was wearing at the end? Like, those shorts would have gotten her kicked out of school, kicked out of Piedmont Hills. Finally, we get the answer in a vlog that Kelsa has posted to her revived account. She forwards it to Call with a message that says, "Here is your answer. Thanks for asking." On video, she reflects, "Someone I love a while back asked me this, so here goes. The Marsh Harrier is a bird of prey known for its hunting and daring courtship displays. About 2 years into their lifespan, some males will undergo a metamorphosis, which changes some of their feathers from a foggy gray to a creamy brown likeness of the female. So I like to say my favorite animal is the Marsh Harrier because of its sky dancing antics. But to myself, I can say, look at that beautiful, talented trans girl and look how high she soars." Aww. The end.
Yay! You did a bang up job of the end. Thank you.
I know I didn't say that she was in her college dorm room when she made that last vlog. Mm-hmm. She said, "Excuse the new surrounding, I moved into student housing." So she is off on her way at UCLA. Go, Kelsa. Go, Kelsa. Go, Kelsa. So, Corinne, what did you think of Anything's Possible?
I love this movie. It deals with the complexities of friendship and how shitty and wonderful they can be. And it deals with the complexity of being a different, unique person and having to negotiate your way through the world. And I love the way the relationship was handled between Kelsa and Call. He just sees her for her. And I love that. And it pisses me off that people get fetishized. This movie, I thought, was just such a sweet relationship story, and I like how they dealt with the trans topics, and I give it a starry-eyed 4 dry kisses. What about you, Tamara?
Well, this movie was, I think everybody should watch it at least once, but that being said, now I know why I blocked out all my high school years. You get a John Hughes high school movie, you're like, oh, this looks like nothing I grew up in. And although I didn't have any transgender classmates, their school like situation looked a lot closer to my school situation, mm-hmm. minus the glorious skimpy attire that we were not allowed to wear. But the friendship thing, and I know it's like they were young, they're in high school, people make mistakes and do dumb shit, but it's just so like, I just hated that, the tension with M, and then how M freaking turned on Chris for no good goddamn reason except for that she was bitter. And that was just all kinds of uckiness that I did not like to see. I think it might have hit too close to home because I didn't say any of this during the podcast, but I dated my very good friend's ex-boyfriend shortly after they broke up. And it was an uncomfortable 6 to 7 months because we were still in the same friend circle but giving each other the stink eye. Her more than me. I was like, can't we just be friends? And her being like, fuck you, you dated my ex. What kind of bitch are you? You're supposed to be my friend. So that also gave me the heebie-jeebies. That being said, though, I do like the relationship, like you said, with Call and Kelsa, because that's what anybody wants. They just want somebody to love them and see them for who they are, because no matter what, at the end of the day, we grow and shift and change on the daily. And long-term relationships, things are going to sag, things are going to hang, things are going to do weird things. Your body is not going to be the same as you are in high school, and you just want somebody to love you in your entirety and totality. so that when you do go through those, that they're still going to be by your side and have your back and love you. And so I think this was a beautiful representation of that. It's just loving somebody just for who they are.
Yeah.
That being said, I did not like the ending, because I know in most romantic comedies, the couple gets together at the end, or we get to see like them finally like, oh, they're together. Yay. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, it was kind of a slight build up to Kelsa and Carl getting together and then be like, but you know what? We can't do long distance. Okay, so bye. And I'm like, no! I wanted that obligatory where they see each other in town like 8 years later and like, hey, and then like they brush past each other, but then they give each other a lingering look over their shoulder and it's open to whatever the possibilities might be in their future. But no, didn't get that. So I'm going to give it, because I should watch
before
it.
Before you give your rating, I just want to say my vision was that Carl says, you know what, I'm going to go to trade school down in LA so that we can still be together. So there you go.
Don't do it, Carl.
No long LA distance.
LA seems like a good idea in your 20s, not your 40s.
You can still do your trade school just in a different state. It'll be fine. So yeah, I wanted the mega happy ending too.
Yeah. So with all that being said, I'm going to give it 3 dry kisses.
Okay.
I do think it's something that people should watch. Too many things that were personal to me made me knock it down a few dry kisses, because I'm just like, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah. But still not a bad movie overall.
I loved it. Excellent. Okay, so, Miss Tamara, what movie are we doing next week?
Next movie we're doing is The Duff.
Woo! So excited! Ugh. That has Mae Whitman in it as the lead, and I love her so much, and she was so amazing in the movie Hope Floats as the little girl.
Oh
yes.
Oh god.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yes, she's fantastic in The Duff as well. So I'm super happy that you picked this one. And if you have anything that you'd like to say about The Duff, anything's possible. Free to be you and me month or anything else, feel free to email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or reach out to us via Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd appreciate it. But in the meantime, we appreciate you stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Yeah. See you next time.
See you next time. Yay!
This podcast may contain... Where am I? Who am I?